Yes.
Yes.
Yes. Let me hear. Let me hear more. Yes.
Yes. Yes.
That's okay. Just sign on the line. Don't worry about the fine print. Don't worry about that in court. Okay. So if in fact, as the year goes on, you find that some of your colleagues are not paying heed to the guidelines that you've all agreed upon, it's your responsibility as members of the community to raise the issue with them, or with me, and I'll raise the issue with them. Okay? All right. So, questions about the program? What program? Not the program for the rest of two quarters, the program you just ran downstairs. Mars, my dog. We have these important questions. Jane's my wife, Tamara's my daughter, and George's my grandson. Pardon? Not what? Well, it's very interesting, you see. Very interesting, you see. What someone said is not yesterday. Well, Pam was born in Jackson, Mississippi. Anybody really ever been in the Deep South? From Jackson? Okay. She was born in Jackson, Mississippi, and Jane at the time was working at a city hospital there. All these people around. And you don't have to share this with your daughter. Some of you are probably deeper here. Her name is really Tamara Wendy. I thought was always kind of nice. And so they asked Jane, you know, what's the baby's name? And she'd say, Tamara Wendy. You know, and the southern ear doesn't hear that. No, tomorrow's Tuesday. What was her name? Tamara Wendy. No. Today is Monday. Tomorrow's Tuesday. What's her name? That's something that we've been hearing for lots of years. From different dialects in different parts of the world. Okay. Her name is Tamara, not Tamara. Although there are Tamaras who are Tamara, not Tamara. Complicated times. Other questions related to the program downstairs we just ran? So everything made sense? So there are two screens that I have questions about. What would I call it if I put my thumb on top of the hose and it sprays out faster? Well, I'd call it magic. Because if I put my finger over the top of the hose, I wouldn't expect anything to come out at all. Because the column can't move. So that's not... Oh, okay. So now she says, what happens if I... Well, I don't have a hose. If this is a hose, and I go like that... Now, I can't do that as well as I used to be able to do that because I have an arthritic joint here. But if I do that, then I've narrowed the opening. Okay? And by narrowing the opening, what I really do is increase the resistance. Now what happens as a result of that, because now, what happens is the stream goes farther than it did. Right? And as a result of narrowing, what happens is the velocity of the molecules increases. Now, how do we define flow? We define flow as volume per time. So if I take a bucket, and I go like this, and I fill up the bucket, and I time how long it takes to fill up the bucket, and then I empty the bucket, I'm going to repeat the experiment now, and I put my finger partially blocking the hose, and I do it again, it will take longer to fill the bucket. Although it'll make a lot more noise because the velocity of the water molecules is moving faster. So we have to distinguish the difference between the distance that it moves in a period of time, the velocity, versus the number of molecules or the volume that's moving in a period of time. Well, it's a little bit building the pressure behind, if in fact, the hose is connected to the faucet. Oh, now, that's a little bit different from the situation that we had when we had the hose out here. Why is it different? It's different because that faucet is connected to a pressure source. And that pressure source is supplying force from whatever the reservoir is. And so, yes, the pressure will increase above it. But in the situation that we were talking about where we put a clamp on, the movement of water by the clamp is in both directions. It is indeed in both directions, and the amount of water that's going to move, the change in the height of the 2 columns, we can consider negligible compared to the total height of the columns. So yes, if I do that, if I have a weak point in the hose, for example, then what will happen is when I put my finger over, that might balloon out. And the thing that causes the balloon out is an increase in pressure. And the reason that there's an increase in pressure is because the resistance is increased, and the outflow, think about the reservoir model, the outflow is now decreased, but the inflow is staying the same to some point. Make sense?
So the volume really increases.
Good question. Another question. Oh, wait a minute. That time of the year where I have to reflect on my past year's activities and stuff, and try to do good things, regardless of whether they're good for me. So she wanted to be with her study group, and I relented, and so not issues. Okay. I am. Should have tomorrow. Question. Comment. And if it said, remember, flow equals volume per unit of time, then how many people do you think would have still had the confusion but not recognized?
Lots.
Yeah. Depends on how much they read the screen. How many of you had this really, really hard time with that one screen that had the same answers stated three different ways?
Not me, it's such a sense of humor.
Okay. People sit at that screen for minutes and minutes and minutes, agonizing. What's the right answer? They all seem to say the same thing. What's different? And what I find is very interesting because you say to them, well, choose an answer, see what happens. No, I might be wrong. No, you might be right. Or you might find out that they all mean the same thing. And the reason to do that screen is that I could tell you that they're all the same, but by having you think about it, then think about it, and the next screen that you put the explanation makes a bigger impact than it would if, in fact, I just told you stuff.
He's a good French rep.
All right. Other questions? All right. So you think you have some idea what that model is about, yes? All right. So here's a problem.
This is an experiment. This is a graph. When I read this graph, what are the questions I ask myself? This graph or any graph? This is the one that's on page 211. What's the first thing I do when I look at this graph? I look at what it's measuring. And how do I know what it's measuring? Pardon? And which axis? Oh, now, you told me I want to know what's measured. Am I going to look at the x-axis or the y-axis? I'm not comparing, not to find out what's being measured. I actually won't ask myself that question. Okay?
Because before I ask myself that question, I want to know what they did. What axis do I look at to find out what they did?
I look at the x-axis. Okay? So, I look at the x-axis and I say, this is what they did. And I look at the y-axis and I say, this is what they measured. Or this is what they got. That make sense? Huge problems with convention.
She's stealing my rubber bands. And then she's giving them away.
Well, I have to be careful because, you know, there are many times when those are not monitored well, and I end up things flying by my hand and stuff. Well, it's an energy gradient. Energy gradient, that's it. So whenever I look at a graph, I want to say, what did they do and what was measured? And so on your models, not the computer thing, you saw there was a graph, there was a box. And the x-axis always came from the box before it, and the y-axis always went to the next box. So this is what I changed, and this is what I got. So tell me what the experiment was. You're going to tell me what the experiment was. Don't tell me why they did it. They increased renal perfusion pressure and measured blood flow, also known as perfusion. And so now that I've got that decided, I can say, what did they see? What was the relationship? So tell me what happened in this experiment. Okay, so as they increased renal perfusion pressure, blood flow increased. Does that make sense? Okay. Because what was happening? As they increased renal perfusion pressure, what was happening to cause an increase in blood flow? The driving force, what? Increase. Okay. So, did the driving force increase beyond this point? Yeah. Well, how come the flow didn't increase? Because what? And what happened to the resistance? It increased. How much did it increase? Proportionally. By the same amount that the driving pressure increased. Okay. We're going to talk about this like next quarter and lots of other places. This point here of actual leveling off of flow in the face of an increasing pressure, it's called autoregulation. We're going to find that happens in the kidney, and it happens in the spraying and it happens to other things. What do you think might happen as I continue to increase this pressure? Do you stay the same forever? What will happen? No, it's not going to do this. Something will happen? What are the other possibilities? Yeah, maybe something might rupture, but maybe not. Oh, okay. She said it might get beyond the barrier and start increasing again. And somebody over here said decrease. Now, why do you think it would decrease? Because the pressure change would continue to increase in the pressure. So, in order for that to decrease, if I increase in pressure, what would happen to have the resistance? They have to increase an awful lot, wouldn't it? Okay? And why? What do you think might happen to resistance if, in fact, you decided that the flow would increase again? You think resistance would decrease? Okay? Or the perfusion pressure would exceed the capability of the vessels to increase resistance. That's a lot nicer sound. Okay, so what we're going to find out, well, let's see what you know. Where do you think, what do you think is responsible for that increase? What part of the vasculature, we haven't talked about it, we'll talk about it later in the quarter, it's not important right now, I just want to know what you think. What part of the vasculature do you think is responsible for increasing the resistance? The what? The afferent arteriole. What's the major work and maybe increasing, or the real key word in what she said? No, that's not it. The afferent arteriole, she says, is responsible. Well, the afferent arteriole may be responsible in the kidney. What might be responsible for increasing the resistance to a muscle? What are you thinking about? Tell me what you're thinking about.
I think it was just
going to be so give me an answer.
Give me an answer? I'm not even
going
to question. Why not? Because it's going so slow. I mean, if I don't know how to read a graph right now, I wouldn't have made it with this sciences.
Oh.
It's so fast.
Okay. So it says here. It says here. Okay, so let's ask the question to show you something. How many people generally have problems reading graphs? Be honest. 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 10. So now the question is, question one, if I think about the vasculature, what part of the vasculature do you think is responsible for causing resistance to flow? And the suggestion here was, if we're talking about this system, it's the afferent arteriole. What about through a muscle bed? What are your choices? If I think about the vasculature, and I'm talking about resistance, what are your choices? Capillaries, arteries, or veins? Anything else? But Russell, she must have something to one of those. Why did you say what she said? Is it arterial or artery, capillary or vein? Oh, okay. What is it? It's a small artery. It's an arteriole.
So, Fatima, what I learned from this is that a lot of folks know about arteries, capillaries, and veins, but they're not familiar with that little segment in between arteries and capillaries called arterioles. And that gives you some valuable information when we come to the circulation and start talking about those vessels. And so what do you think? What do you think is the major feature of those arterioles? What do they have in them? The capillaries don't. They just move muscle. You can change their diameter, change their radius, cause a change in resistance.
And we're going to deal with that a lot in the coming days.
Okay.
So, what's next? But I'm torn now, because a lot of you think that we've been screwing around with this stuff about preparing things, and God, I know how to do this, I'm a good student, and I've gotten so far.
It's not that.
I'm not talking about you. I'm not talking about you. I understand where you're coming from, that's all right. You're not the only one. And we did some stuff with previewing in the retreat. And my question is, really, well, I guess the first question, how many people have Jones and Bell with them?
The textbook.
So do me a favor, then, later on, do exercise 2 on C10. What I want you to do is draw an information map, any kind of information map, that will provide a framework for you to start thinking about chapter 2. And what I want you to do actually is do something similar to the exercise that I showed you about the chapter in anatomy. Maybe make a mind map or make a flow chart about what you think is going on. You need what I want you to do is practice using pictorial organizers to organize your thinking instead of textual things. So, yep. I want you to do exercise 2. Exercise 1. Alright. So now let's talk about exercise 3 on page C14. I want you to look at those 3 systems. I'll give you a couple minutes, and I want you to answer the questions about steady state, transient state. What do the words mean to you? And which system is in equilibrium, which one's in steady state. So I'll give you about 4 or 5 minutes. Talk about it. Thank you. Okay. Who needs more time? Anybody need more time? I'm trying to shoot myself. Yep. Because of the pump. So because we started from the middle. Okay.
So what does steady state mean to you?
Not changing, not static. Not static, not changing. Things are staying the same. What does transient mean? Changing, things are changing. All right, that's good. So, what happens when I open this valve? I have a transient state until she says it reaches equilibrium. Uh-oh, got a new word. What does equilibrium mean? The lowest potential energy. Is equilibrium a steady state? Yes. Is a steady state equilibrium? Not necessarily. What happens in system 3? Is that an equilibrium? No. Why? Because there's energy being put into the system. Okay? So, is it a steady state? Why? Because the what remains constant? The water levels are remaining constant. So how does it get to be that way? If we take this pump and we put it in this system, in system 2, and we turn that pump on, tell me a stepwise fashion what's going to happen to reach this steady state. I put this pump into the system when the levels are equal, when it's at equilibrium. I turn the pump on, and at some point, I get to this steady state. So I want you to describe for me what happens during the transient state, during the state when I go from turning the pump on to the point that I reach this steady state and nothing is changing. Okay, so water starts to flow from B to A. The pump is creating a pressure gradient, which is causing flow from B to A. And the valve is supplying some resistance. Let's assume the valve doesn't really supply resistance. Well, the pipe does at least, okay. That's why the waters are at different levels. No, I don't think that's why the waters are at different levels. What can you tell me if these water levels aren't changing? What can you tell me about the rate of flow here on that path compared to the rate of flow on this path? They're the same. So now, what has to happen? Oh, I know. Let's do this experiment a little bit differently. You're in your bathroom. Is everybody familiar with that in the bathroom? Right? And you turn the water on in the sink. And you have an average size drain. And what happens to the water in the bowl? It begins collecting. Okay? And does it overflow? No, what happens? No? We're not assuming it doesn't get to the overflow. So what happens to the level? It's in a steady state. And why is it in a steady state? Because inflow equals outflow. Now the question is, how did it get to be that way? Was it that way as soon as you turn on the faucet? No. What happened then? No, you turn on the faucet and it's on. Inflow is greater than outflow. Yes, sir. You may. Okay. You don't want to be equal, but okay. No volition. So what she says is, when I turn the pump on, until the time the water gets over into the outlet here, there's going to be a decrease in the level in D. Okay? And then as water gets in there, what happens to the level in A? It'll increase. So you turn on the faucet in the sink, and Alex, what did you say? The amount of inflow exceeds the outflow, and that continues until, as far as you said, the... Didn't you say something about the inflow and outflow of what? Yeah? What did you say? No, you don't have to turn it down. The water pressure, the height of the water in the bowl increases, increasing the driving pressure for outflow. Until the outflow is the same as the inflow, and the level stays constant. So this water goes from here to here, and when it does that, it increases this height. And what does this flow depend on? A pressure gradient between A and B. And then the pressure gradient between A and B, coupled with the resistance of this tube, equals the flow through the pump back, then you're in a steady state and those levels stay constant. So if I turn the pump down, what's going to happen to the levels for a little while? The what? The level in B is going to go up a little bit, and the level in A is going to go down a little bit, and following that transient state, what do I end up in next? Another steady state. Does that make sense to you? So what are we doing differently now than what you were doing before? When I asked you the question before, you described for me what the end state would be. And used some nebulous words, collection of words, to try to explain them. And what we did now is we took a stepwise approach to this, and we said, what happened first, what happened second, what happened third, and what's the end consequence? So we said, in this case, we put the tubes in here, we turn on the pump, that caused water to move from here to here, lowering that level, and when the water came out into this tank, the amount of inflow into the tank exceeded the outflow, and so the level in this reservoir went up. And by going up, it increased the pressure gradient, or the pressure head over here, and this is being decreased, and so the pressure gradient causing the flow through the tube increased, And so the flow increased through the tube until the inflow to A and B equal the outflow. And we were in a steady state. Yes, ma'am.
Now it says, when the driving pressure stabilizes,
then the inflow equals the outflow in the steady state. Okay? Does that make sense to everybody? Can I apply this model to this? I can apply it to this portion, but the cause of it staying constant was not a change in driving pressure unless you have the tank. It's also included in the resistance. We're going to find lots and lots of places where we can apply that model to the system.
So I have a question for you. Next question is...
being brought back to a middle ground. But not necessarily middle, but where it's supposed to be. Equilibrium.
Steady state.
Steady state. So now we've got several answers here. We've got being brought to where it's supposed to be. We have equilibrium. We have a steady state. Are there differences between those three? Yeah. So which do you think better describes or best describes and best defines the word homeostasis? Homeostasis is a steady state. Homeostasis is not necessarily normal. Homeostasis is not returning to where it should be. We're going to see that there are situations where regulatory mechanisms attempt to return things to where they're supposed to be. But homeostasis really means a steady state. And that'll have great implications for us as we move through physiology.
Okay. Yep.
In a biological term, you can have homeostasis in a closed system.
Yes.
Homeostasis does not mean death. Okay? Equilibrium in an overall system like that tends to mean death. Okay? And that's not homeostasis. We're going to find that the system in many cases is designed to maintain homeostasis. And that's what you all learned somewhere in your biology book. And the implication was that that's normal. And that's where things should be. And all that homeostasis means is things are in a steady state. So you can be in a homeostatic state and not be normal at all. It's in a steady state. And we'll talk more about that later.
Okay, let's take a break. 10 minutes.
Why is it up?
so than last week. Surprising. I'm good. Okay. I'm good.
All right. And tell me what you see. Look at the picture and tell me what you see. What do you see? What? She sees cute little farm animals. Okay? There's a pig and an owl and a dog and a raccoon. You know those raccoon farms? There's another raccoon and another owl. Okay? What else do you see? A bucket loader. And how did you know that it was a bucket loader? Because it says bucket loader. Okay? All right. What else do you see? Do you see a steady state?
Yes.
No, you don't see a steady state. It's implied, but you don't see it. All right, so what do you see? You see a factory? No, it's already made. Oh, they're bundling it. Okay, they're bundling something. What do you think they're bundling? Wheat. And why do you think they're bundling wheat? Because it has pictures of wheat. Okay? All right. What else do you see? What is the raccoon doing? The raccoon by the truck. Shoveling. What is he shoveling? Wheat. And where is it going? And the bucket loader, and what's happening in a bucket loader? What's the bucket loader doing? Dumping it out of the basket. He's not dumping it out of the bag. He's dumping it into the funnel thing. And how do you know that it's being dumped into the funnel thing? Because there are arrows. Okay? Alright, that's good. Alright. Why am I putting you through this pain? Pardon me? You're interpreting signs. Did I ask you to interpret the sign? Did I ask you to interpret the picture?
That's not an interpretation. The point. It's an observation.
It's our impersonal interpretation of our observation.
Well, so far you haven't interpreted anything. You've recognized something and you said, what is that object? Pardon me? That, well, you didn't see any movement.
No.
But you said I asked you to interpret something. And I purposely did not ask you to interpret something. I asked you to observe something. Okay? So Megan's the only one that really said anything about interpretation. She said it's a steady state. Yeah? Didn't you say that? Okay. What's my point? My point is, many, many times, you're going to look at diagrams, you're going to look at graphs, and you're going to look at all kinds of things, and you're going to say, what does it mean? Without ever looking at it and saying, what do I see? So when you look at a diagram, the first thing you want to ask yourself, I don't care if it's anatomy or biochemistry or histology or an ad in the newspaper or something in physiology, first thing that you want to decide is, not what is this telling me, but what do I see? And I can't tell you how many thousands of people, just thousands of people, I've asked what they see, and they tell me all about these things, and they never tell me what that is. And why not?
Well,
because they didn't read the words. Finally, after about 5 minutes, somebody says, well, it's a bucket loader. And I say, how do you know it's a bucket loader? Because they say, oh, because it says bucket loader. You know, the diagram and the picture tells you all kinds of stuff, but you first have to recognize what it is that you're seeing. And then you can ask, okay, how do I interpret it? What does this diagram mean to me? So you said, this guy is putting weak, because this had weak, and weak is coming out here. There have been times when somebody has said, gold. Why is it gold? Well, because the color picture this shows us is yellow. They didn't grow up on a farm, and they're not interested in PCC or any of those other places. They don't really know what that means. Yeah.
Doesn't that make that interpretation?
At that point, that's an interpretation.
Or are we interpreting the best symbol?
It could be.
I mean,
it could be. And that depends. That then depends on your level of knowledge of wheat and barley and things like that. But in fact, if you're real familiar with all those grains, that looks pretty much more like wheat than other grains. But I have to know, you're right, I have to know something about that. So that's okay. So now you told me that this guy was putting something in here. Oh, guy is generic, by the way. Please recognize that guy is generic. How do I know that? You're all too young. How do I know that? How many people watch the electric company? How many people know what the electric company is?
It's the place that supplies the electricity.
No! The electric company, it's a generational problem. First there was Sesame Street. And then there was the electric company. The electric company was put out by the same children's television workshop. And the electric company starts out and you hear somebody say, hey, you guys! And all these boys and girls come running. And that's how I knew that guys is generic.
Have you seen
my people
Sesame Street?
No. But what, that older Sesame Street?
Before it came out.
Yeah, those are the ones that I saw. I haven't seen Sesame Street in years. I see, all right.
So it still could be flipped to me, but I like the story of the
one. See what I have to put up with? I just need this hard life. Anyway, so
this raccoon, whatever it is putting, you said, grain into this bucket loader, which is dumping stuff into this funnel-like thing that we might call a hopper, if you're a farm guy. And that's coming out and going into these sacks, and they're being carried away on the truck. So where's the physiology in this? Well, we already talked about the physiology in this to some extent. Well, why should we do it again? Well, because it helps to see things in different places. That's a lot. What does the level in this reservoir depend on? Okay, so if we listen to this wonderful
explanation.
Try
to say what you said.
That little guy there is like a KCP. Like putting the GPAs and all that energy up to make another kind of gradient, which in this case is the lead going to fall through there. Well, the lead's going to rest part. I'm not sure if there's anything else I need to say with it.
Okay, the question was, why is the level staying constant?
Because she says we're putting energy in. Okay, I have an idea. Ready? Now listen to the difference in that answer. This is really, really key to how I want you to think about things. So Rhea, ask me the question. Hopper. Why is the level staying high? Because the amount of stuff that's coming in a period of time equals the amount of stuff that's leaving in a period of time. What's the difference in the answers? One is generic versus applying it to something. What's the other? I didn't talk about energy, why not? Because that's the cause. The question was, why is this staying constant? The question wasn't, how does it get that way, or what are all the steps along the way? The question was, why is it staying constant? That's true. The question, though, really wasn't what are the steps involved in getting it. The question was, if I look at that, and you guys are going to really think this is, he's being really picky in hell now, God, he's not only going slow, but he's just picking on these little points. But when you come to your exams in all courses, you have to realize what the question is that's being asked, and then answer the questions being asked. And if it's too simple, that's okay. That's what was being asked. So the answer to the question, why is this staying the same, is because the amount coming in equals the amount going out. We start at the problem. Let me give you an example. You're a King County Sheriff's representative working for Kenmore Police. You're driving down Juanita Drive. And you come to the corner of Juanita Drive and 68, and there's a car accident there. Okay? And so you stop. You stop, and what's the first question that you ask? Is everyone okay? That's the first question you ask. What's the second question that you ask? What? What happened? Okay. Did you ask one driver, did you have a bad day? Have you been drinking? Did you run the red light? Did you have an argument with your wife? Did you slip off the brake onto the gas? No, you asked, what happened?
Thank you.
That's true. But I think unless you, if you're in a carotid artery situation, unless you have some idea of what happened, you have no idea if you're still in an emergency situation. Okay, so listen to what she said. Listen to what she said, because this is really, really important. This is the heart of the matter that I'm trying to get to. She said, if you ask what happened, you have to be kind of specific about what you meant. Okay? Because she said, what she said was, if the guy had a blocked artery because his diet wasn't good, then you have to think about, is he still in danger of plaque breaking loose and causing a stroke someplace? So, what she said is, before you worry about that, you look at the immediate situation. And so, the answer to the question, what happened, is not that this guy's got a bad diet, didn't exercise, lifestyle were crap. He had a heart attack. Guy had a heart attack. And what does a heart attack mean? Oh, it means that maybe a coronary artery is blocked. And you start there. You start with the accident. You say, what happened? What happened for the cop is, okay, what did you see? What happened? Who hit who? What happened? And then you move back from there to find out and try to identify the causes. Okay? You don't look globally in the whole universe and say, there's 7,000 different things that could have happened in the long history of this guy to cause a heart attack. The first thing that you have to recognize is that, in fact, he had a heart attack. And what that either means is there's been a coronary artery that's blocked and the blood supply to the heart is no longer good, or maybe there's a conduction problem that has caused a cardiac arrest, something else like going up, but boy, the heart's in danger. And then you can start asking what led to this. And you end up in solving those problems, moving outward, not moving from the outside in. So this question was, how come this is the level isn't moving? And the answer is, because the amount coming in is equal to the amount going out. Now we can look at this, and we've already done it with the toilet. We can look at this and say, okay, what happens if the bucket loader rate increases and the stuff coming out stays the same? It has the level of the reservoir. It goes up. It doesn't necessarily overflow, but it goes up. So we're in a steady state. And we talked about this already the other day. We said, fine, where is this going to apply physiologically? It's going to apply when we talk about alveolar gases. It's going to apply. It's going to apply when we actually talk about blood pressure in some ways. It's going to apply when we talk about glucose levels in the blood. It's going to apply when we talk about a whole bunch of lab tests and interpret the lab tests and what they tell us. So this is another one of our general models. It's our reservoir model. Now we have two. We have the mass and heat flow model. Okay, gradients, flow, and resistance, and we have the reservoir model. Is this making sense?
No, why not?
So if we use those kinds of things, and you look at the next page, there are some problems. Look at the first problem in your group. And set it up. Don't solve it. Just set it up for me. Tell me how you would go about looking at that problem and solving it. I'll give you a couple minutes.
I will tell you that you can assume that that fish tank is in a steady state. The fish and the fish tank are in a steady state. This problem. Okay? Second question. How many people said this is algebra? I'm not sure I can do this. How do you set up the equation? Anybody think that? Okay? Who's going to admit, who's going to not admit that they had that problem? Alright! Okay. Okay? So what did you do first? Okay? He said that I noticed that there's more coming in than is going out. So the fish must have eaten something.
Can you say the fish wasn't eating something? It's still sat down and it's
holding on. Sounds very complicated to me. Anybody draw a sketch? There is a sketch. Okay. So did you use the sketch?
Yes.
All right. So here's the sketch. Okay. So, if you want to know how much the fish eats in a minute, and you're taking Charles's approach to this, what must you find out? Okay, so the first thing that you need to figure out is how much, and notice she said something really neat, how many milligrams per minute of nutrient is going in.
I think about that before I think about what's going out, because the way I say things, the way I think about things, the amount that goes in the theory probably doesn't want to go out. And I'm always using the same sequence. So how do I find out how many milligrams are coming in there in a minute? Pardon? Look at the rate of flow, okay? Oh, not a concentration gradient, but a concentration. So the rate of flow is 100 milliliters of nutrient per minute, and each milliliter of nutrient contains 20 milligrams of fluid, of nutrient. Now, if you don't know what to do here, what's the clue? The units. Units are our friends. Okay? And so we say, well, all right, there are 2,000 milligrams of nutrient per minute coming in there. And how do I find out? This is a trick question. How do you find out how much is coming out? You do the same thing! Alright!
So I know that there are 100 milliliters per minute coming out. And what else do I know?
There's 15 milligrams
of nutrient per milliliter, so there's 1,500 milligrams per minute going out. How much is efficient?
500 milligrams. Did I have to worry about 500 milligrams per minute? Do I have to worry about an equation and x's and y's? Well, can I do that? Of course you can. But in my experience, it's very interesting. In my experience, as soon as I give somebody a word problem, like the next one, blood enters a tissue. Blood entering tissue bed is found to have CO2 content of 0.48 milliliters CO2 per milliliter, but blood leaving the tissue is much. How much is it? It's a word problem. Oh my God, it's algebra. Oh my God, I'm not sure. I got to put an X someplace, but I'm not sure what to do. And so all hell breaks loose in your mind. And you say, I don't know, I'm wrong, I'm getting stressed out, I'm not sure. And they say, I'm sorry, I can't do that, I can't do that. It's just too much. And so my response, of course, after saying, sure you can. And they say, no, I have this math phobia. It started in the sixth grade. And it's continued on all my life. And so I say to them, okay, you go into the grocery store. And somebody has taken off the unit cost on the tag. And you have a jar of peanut butter that has 16 ounces and costs so much. And another jar of peanut butter that has 20 ounces and so much. Which one's the best buy? And you know what? There aren't very many people that have problems doing it. They say, oh, I take the price and I divide by the number of ounces that are in the jar, and that would tell me. There's no problem there. What's the difference? The difference, you say, this problem with the peanut butter is my everyday life. And that math problem, the word problem, that's school. That's got to be different. And I will tell you that most of you have absolutely no problem doing grocery store math. And so you take these problems and you turn them into grocery store math. There are 100 cases. There are 100 cases of peanut butter that leave the store in a day. And each case contains 20 jars of peanut butter. How many jars of peanut butter are left in a day?
Oh,
that's okay. All right. So, before tomorrow, work on problem 2 and work on problem 3. We'll see what you come up with. Okay, let's go over to exercise 7 for a minute. We'll come back to 5 and 6 tomorrow. You already know something about 5 and 6, right? We talked about receptors and chemistry and other places. We'll come back to that. Those are actually two other general models. But what we're going to talk about is regulation for a moment. And what we want to know is, what does regulation mean in terms of a physiological system? So, tell me what you think regulation means.
I know guys who play Friday, Tuesday, and have 10 minutes left when they get out of the room and
What is the word regulation apply to? An operation system to do what? Okay, she says regulation is some mechanism to maintain something in homeostasis. Okay, so in a steady state. Now, if you're going to maintain something at the same level, what do you have to do then? Well, before I have a negative and positive feedback system, what do I have to do? I have to put energy in. Okay. Is that what I have to do? Do I have to have a resistance? I don't know. Let me think about this now. All right, I have an idea. How do you know if you're out of balance? You have to observe it. What do you mean by observe? When you look at it, what are you doing? I have an idea. You have to monitor it. You have to measure it. Okay? So let's think about this now. You're driving down Juanita Drive. You're driving down Juanita Drive, and this is very important when driving down Juanita Drive. The speed limit sign says 35. Because if you don't go 35, if you go 40, either at the top of the hill or bottom of the hill, sometime during the year, the Kenmore cops are out there with their little radar guns and they're going to ticket you. It's a favorite thing that they do. Okay? Good to know. So you want to go faster than 35. So you're driving this car, and it's going at some speed, and you're going to measure the speed. What's the measuring device? The speedometer is measuring device. Okay. And so, you're looking at the speedometer, and what do you ask yourself? Is your speedometer correct? Well, you don't know if it's correct or not.
Well, I can ask my correct. Mine says zero.
So, can you, if yours says zero, can you regulate your speed?
No.
No.
I can just go extra slow.
You go extra slow and hope it's 35.
The speed of the car in front of me so we can get it to there. Or you can only see if it's not flashing.
Yep. Yeah.
But you told me that in order to regulate something, in order to keep it fairly constant, I have to be able to measure it. So a regulated variable, it has to be sensed. It's a sensed variable. It's measured. And we decided that in your car, your speedometer is sensing the speed. And Fatima has has an extreme situation where she knows that the speedometer is broken because it's not registering any speed. So if in fact, if you listen to what she said, she's measuring something else. She's making an assumption, which is not in her control system, she's making the assumption that the person in front of her is going at an appropriate speed, and she's measuring the distance between her and the car in front of her.
Actually, I'm measuring the potential that the person in front of her
gets speed, so there's some... No, you're not. You're not thinking about a speeding ticket. You're trying to go a speed limit.
No, I was...
Because if they were going slow, you'd slow down. Yeah, I see. Well, all right.
So you have to know what.
And what's the goal? What did you say you had to do? Well, you said you needed something. What did you say, Ben? You said something about a set point. Did you say a set point? You said a set point. That's going now. And what is that set point? What tells you the set point in that situation? The speed limit sign. And so what do you do with the information that you get from the speedometer and this set point that you've remembered from the sign? What do you do? You compare them. You haven't regulated the speed yet. So now in our system, we had to have something that was sensing the variable. We had to have something that was like a set point that told us what the proper value was, something like that, and we had to compare those two signals. And if those two signals are close together, essentially the same, what do I do? Nothing. Everything is fine. But what happens if the speedometer is less than my set point? What do I do? I speed up. And why do I speed up? In our terms, because there's an error. There's an error between the set point and the value that I measured. And the error is a negative error. Because the speed is less than the set point. And so what then do I do? How do I speed up? I press the gas. One of you guys wanted to talk about negative feedback. So let's see what we have so far. What we have so far is that you said that there was a sensor. And that sensor measured... That sensor measured what was coming to it, and that was the speed. And measuring that speed, that sent that signal up to, in this case, our brain, where we had a comparator. And that comparator compared that speed to a set point. And out of that came an error signal. And based on the error signal, we made a decision. And we decided, in the case that we talked about, that we were going too slow and we needed to push the gas pedal down. So we had a controller that made that decision about what to do about that error. And that controller acted upon what? By my foot. And the foot, we could say, is an effector. It's causing something to happen. And the effector then, I guess, is my foot and the gas pedal. And as a result of that, I've now changed the speed. Which I am measuring with the sensor. So in that system, somebody mentioned the word negative feedback. Where do you see negative feedback in that system? What does that mean to you? What does the word mean? Well, what does feedback mean to you? The information is hitting the sensor. What does feedback imply? Communication in what direction? Toward the origin. Back. Feeding back. So this line represents a negative feedback. And what we can do with that, of course, we can put some numbers and we can put some signs on it, and we can say, I subtract that from the set point, and that gives me an error. Okay? The direction of the error is determined by that difference. If this is, the speed is too slow, that error is a positive error. And the controller is going to act on that in a particular way to reduce it, excuse me, to increase it. If this is too large, that is a negative error, and the controller is going to work on it the other way. So this is a regulatory mechanism, a regulatory system, a feedback control system. There's a difference, however, between the word control as we use it and the word regulate as we use it. Who's we? We is me and a colleague in Chicago, and hopefully Tom. In your book, control and regulation, in many cases, are synonymous. The difference between control and regulation is that regulation implies that there is a sense variable. Control means that something is being controlled. I'll give you an example. You have a system in your cardiovascular system in your head to make sure or try to maintain blood pressure at a relatively constant level. And from what you know about the cardiovascular system, if the blood pressure goes low, what can the system do that you know about, or guess about, what can the system do to increase the blood pressure? Sorry? Right. No, go ahead. Can you increase your heart rate? Okay? And if you increase your heart rate, then you're increasing the amount of blood that goes into the artery, and the amount coming in is now exceeding the amount going out, so what happens to the volume in the artery? It increases. Then the artery is an elastic structure. It has recoil. So what's going to happen to the pressure in there? It's going to increase. And those sensors are in the wall of a couple arteries. And so it's going to sense that increase in pressure. Did we measure heart rate? Was heart rate measured in this situation? No. But heart rate was controlled. Heart rate was increased, or if pressure is too high, heart rate will go down. So the heart rate is a controlled variable, but it's not regulated. Blood pressure is a regulated variable, and what makes it a regulated variable? Because it's sensed, because it's measured. Okay? So that's very, very important. That distinction is very important, and we're going to find that there are a lot of things that are controlled. And there are a lot of things that are regulated. And those things that are regulated are also controlled, but those things that are controlled are not necessarily regulated. And we want to keep in mind that difference. And so this is another system. This is another system that is the net result is to try to keep things fairly constant. Can it always bring things back to normal? No. And we'll talk about why and what later on. Well, somebody on their card looked ahead and they asked me the other day about feet forward. So what do you think feet forward might mean? What do you think? What do you think feet? No, what do you think it means? What does the word tell you? Let's ask somebody else. What does the word tell you? Making a prediction, like, or anticipating. Okay? So you people, Tom is one of you, you people who go outside and decide that they're going to start running, okay? In your system, things happen before you start running. Okay? And that signal to muscles and blood pressure and a bunch of other things is an anticipatory signal. And that's a feed forward. It's not necessarily part of a regulatory mechanism. It's an anticipation. Oh, what's another reason? That's another thing. Oh, I don't know. You guys like to eat. Right? What happens when you go by that cafeteria? Oh, no. What happens if you let's do the Jewish mother thing again. Let's assume you're all Jewish. Okay? Because I don't relate to others. Let's assume that you're all Jewish, okay? And it's Friday night. Okay? And you walk into your mother's house, right? And you smell chicken soup. Okay? What happens? What happens in your body? You get hungry. You salivate. There's some other things that happen. The other things that happen is that your stomach starts secreting hydrochloric acid. You start secreting other kinds of things that go into the small intestine, things like that. It's anticipatory. That signal elicits an anticipation, and that says something is coming along. That's feed forward. And then you said, oh my God, why am I having this chicken soup and this baked chicken again? Every day, every Friday, for the last 65 years, can't you make something different? So Bob Grossberg's mom said, okay, I want the kids, they lived in New Orleans, I want the kids, hello Richard, I want the kids to come for Friday night dinner. So I'll ask them, what kind of food do you like? And they said, Chinese. So Grossman's mom went through all these Chinese recipes and made them all kosher. Right? And ended up writing a cookbook called the Chinese Kosher Cookbook, which is very, very, one day I'll bring it in and we'll read part of it and we'll see that this grandmother's got. Of course, the kids got sick of that after a while, and then she did the same thing with Italian recipes. Okay. Collect cards. You need to put the tables and chairs back. Don't forget your name tags.
Whatever you want.
You put your name on, you put this here, whatever you want.
Thank you.
When did you have your account?